Spiegel and Holmes.
First of all, congratulations. You know, it's nice to have a couple new faces at the Score. And not just kidding.
Afternoons on the Score.
Second and nine. Rolling towards 1 minute to go in quarter one. Now it's a pump, but he ran out of time. Couldn't run away from Sweat. Byron Cowart, loss of two.
He demands attention, right? You know, so that helps free up the other rushers. And that's so important to be able to do that, to have a guy like that. When you can have two, it's even better, you know, and that's what we're searching to do here coming forward. But it's important that you don't have to cover as long. The pressure's there. And what's great about Tez is that he's a great run player, too. You know, so he understands that stopping the run gets you favorable down at distances so we can rush the passer. And, you know, he's always done that well.
My favorite DMX song of all time.
Right here?
Yeah. This will put me on 10. Like, on 10.
Did you tell Tanny or does he just know?
He just knows.
That's the thing. That's the thing.
The track is called Stop Being Greedy.
Mm.
And it is, it's like, as far as like motivation, like if you needed a heavy lift day or if you were trying to express yourself physically.
Sure.
Yeah, this is what I hear in my head.
I got you.
I'm in those moments.
I got a playlist of stuff like that to get me going for, like, you know, if I'm riding a bike or I'm going down to work out.
Yeah.
This is probably my favorite DMX song also, like, because this is like right when he first blew up and like a lot of the commercial radio was playing Get At Me Dog, but this is like, I think this might have been the B-side, but this is the side that we were playing on the college stations.
Yeah, and that song, like, he's so angry in that song, and I love it.
Because he wants you to stop being greedy.
He very much wants you to stop being greedy.
Speaks, your playlist is all Milli Vanilli, right?
Most of it. Thank you. Just like the Menendez brothers.
Sure.
That's the way I rock.
Every time I see one of those like promos, I'm like, uh-huh. Is this the night that we get to see Young Speaks?
I'm still not in there. I'm 7 episodes in. Haven't seen myself or anyone that's approximating me in any of the youth tennis scenes. But Stop Being Greedy might be what you would say to Ryan Poles if he were to go out and trade, say, I don't know, a 4th round pick for Hassan Reddick, or a 5th round pick for Hassan Reddick. So, I mean, and that is a specific guy that causes a problem and demands some conversation. And I know, but is this even a year where the Bears should be considering mid-season being aggressive at the deadline? Ryan Poles has done this before.
Okay, let me ask you this.
No, I asked you something, sir.
I'm going to answer your question. I said good day, sir. I'm going to ask you a question in response to your question that may change the way you feel about the question.
All right, well, we might never get anywhere just doing that.
It's possible, but it's a talk show.
All right, let's give it a shot.
Do you think that through 6 games,
the
Bears have surprised themselves with where they are from a record standpoint? Because that might change the way they look at the trade deadline. Like, are they sitting there going, you know what? This is happening faster than we thought. We're a little bit better than what we thought we might be. Perhaps there's an opportunity here.
I, unsurprisingly, have a question to ask you based on that. Can we reframe that in terms of have they surprised themselves with both the record and the quality of play? Because if you make a trade or if you think you are better than expected, that ought to be based not just on the fact that you've gotten those wins. It ought to be based on the fact that you've shown a certain kind of progress and you have a certain amount of belief in your team. So it's just a slight augmentation to your question.
When I look at the Bears, we kind of knew that the defense was going to be good. Maybe top 5 good. They've been that.
Yeah.
The thing that you didn't know was, what's up with the quarterback?
How quickly was he going to be
there? How quickly can he get on board? If you are looking at it from a power ranking standpoint right now in the NFC, the Bears are in the top 10 on that list, right?
In the power rankings?
Yeah.
In the NFC? Top 10 in the NFC.
Top 10 in the NFC.
For
probably
sure.
Top 6 in the NFC. Maybe top 5 in the NFC.
I from a power ranking standpoint, they're top 15 in the NFL.
Okay.
Top 17 at worst in the NFL.
Okay. So that puts you squarely into the we're contenders. Yeah. For what? I don't know. But it's a one-game sample when we're talking about the playoffs in the NFL. Wacky things happen.
Yeah.
Bounce goes your way. If you think that you're in a similar spot to what the Texans were last year, if you think that enough progress has been made, don't you owe it to yourself to take the next step?
You think the Texans wish they had made a deal for Danielle Hunter or somebody like that to help them possibly win a second playoff game? And then who knows what happens after that? Yeah. I'm feeling cautious myself.
That's okay.
That's where I am.
That is a completely valid feeling about this year's Bears team.
I'm thrilled with where they are. I feel great about where they are. I would like to see how far they can go. And I also want to see a little room for some of these young players to keep producing. I don't feel the need to try and perfect the roster by mortgaging tomorrow right now.
I don't know if you'd have to do a lot of mortgaging considering it's the NFL and these types of trades aren't the mortgage type, but you could augment a little bit. But the reason why your feeling is completely valid is because 6 of the last 8 weeks is when you're going to play all of your games in the division. And you don't know kind of where you're at in regards to it. That being said, when I look at the Bears, I do think that they need another person to rush the passer. I don't, on paper, Hassan Reddick would be ideal, but I've got concerns. I've got concerns on the compensation aspect of it. I've got concerns about why he was so okay with not playing, incurring the fines, and maybe he didn't like the vibe over there at the Jets and didn't want to be a part of anything that was going on with the Jets, which may turn out to be the right move. But if I were him right now, seeing that the Jets are seemingly pushing all in, I would be inclined to go, all right, let's see if I can be the difference maker to get us over the hump. There's so many unanswered questions about Reddick other than the tape. Like, I know the guy can play, but there's so many other unanswered questions that I would be very risk averse if I were Ryan Poles in trying to bring him in.
There is this other wrinkle into the Hassan Reddick situation. Josina Anderson had tweeted this the other day that the Eagles get a 2026 second round pick from the Jets if Hassan Reddick gets traded to an NFC team, per multiple sources. So that's the other condition, Josina tweeted, involved in the trade for Reddick to the Jets that was newly reported a couple of weeks ago. So that's a big deal. So the Eagles, if the Jets give up on Reddick and trade him back to the NFC, the conditional draft pick becomes a second rounder. Unlikely that the Jets will do that. That means the Lions and the Bears might, you know, have a very hard time getting that to happen.
Might be worth it for the Lions. Aiden Hutchinson's gone. Like, he's gone. Might be worth it for them.
So, but they'd have to give some kind of compensation to the Jets to make up for the Jets having to give up their pick. So the Lions could give up their second round pick, you're saying, to the Jets. So then the Jets could swallow the cost of their own second round pick.
But if I'm any contender, I'm sniffing around Las Vegas.
For Max Crosby?
Oh, yeah.
No, I wouldn't sniff around Las Vegas without protection.
That's a good point by you.
What parts?
That's a good point.
We're going to get a chance. Oh,
yeah,
man.
We go to Circa next month.
Danny, make sure you cut that so we can use that in advance of the Vegas trip.
I don't have the endorsement anymore anyway, so it doesn't matter.
Oh, that's sad.
Love Circa. Looking forward to getting back out there and have a good time.
This is going
to
be great.
I had a good run, by the way. I played at the D. Went over to the D.
What'd you play?
I played, I had this incredible craps moment.
Man.
The first time I went, there was the big like meeting of all of the people that were there for the super contest, and I snuck downstairs and played like 20 minutes of blackjack and walked like 400.
Woo.
Then speaks as someone who plays.
I don't play much craps,
but you play poker.
I do.
So you understand like a hot run. I got to this craps table. It was a Friday afternoon. We had finished the show, Now, I enjoy craps. Like, I'm not a great craps player. I like to play and learn. Like, that, it's worth like a $200 investment on a $10 table for me to learn how to play craps.
It's a good way to think about it.
And I'm looking at this table, and everyone at the table is having a blast. And that's the type of thing that you want. All right. So the D is a sister property of Circa, by the way.
Yeah, yeah. And craps is a communal gambling experience.
So I get there and I'm like, okay, I'm going to see what's going on. They're doing crazy stuff.
It's group gambling.
And it's crazy. Like, it's way beyond like what I usually do from a risk standpoint. They're throwing on hard sixes and hard eights. And we're doing all this stuff. And everyone is pressuring the bets and all of this stuff. And it starts to hit. Everyone at the table is getting rich. It was the most fun I've ever had playing craps. And even if we had lost as a table, it would have still been that fun because of the communal aspect of it. At the end of this thing, like, this guy that was rolling, I think he got off 32 rolls without crapping out.
That's insane.
And we are hitting the hard ways. And we are like, it. Money is just flying across the table.
This is when the casino boss, Alec Baldwin, sends over William H. Macy.
Yeah, and I was honestly, I was afraid that I was the cooler when I joined the table. Nothing was stopping this dude. Nothing was stopping.
Not even you.
Not even me. So my $200 turned into a really good profit. And when he crapped out, the entire table left.
Like, well, that happened.
We were all like, you can color us up. We're leaving.
Man.
So I'm standing in front of the guy that was rolling. He's on one end of the table. His wife's on the other end of the table. They're doing really well. And they said, well, how'd you end up? I was like, man, I appreciate you so much. This is great. Learned a lot. Made a lot of money. It was good. So I told him what I was walking with. And I was like, how much are you walking with? How much? Because you were there a lot longer than me. $6,400 for the husband. $3,900 for the wife.
Oh, that's lovely.
They spent 40 minutes at the table.
That's unbelievable.
It was joy.
That's pretty awesome.
Now, I don't know if I'll have another run like that if we go back, but for the 2 days that I gambled at Circa and at the D, that's what went on.
That is tremendous.
Anyway,
well, we're
back
to
football.
We're gonna have some gambling times when we get to Vegas. That's gonna be fun as hell. If we can pull you away from the strip where you'll be sniffing everything.
I'll be sniffing to get Max Crosby in a Bears uniform.
I mean,
or in someone else's uniform.
That's not what you said. You'd be sniffing around Vegas,
yeah,
like everywhere.
Yeah,
where's Lawrence?
To get Max Crosby. That's the whole point. But to speak to that, let's go back to Hard Knocks for a second.
Okay.
Because it was one of those moments where Ryan Poles could have made a move that a lot of people would have said, man, that's a solidifying move for a GM that thinks that his team is a playoff team.
Especially at that time, because there was no idea who the other edge rusher was going to be on the other side. They didn't draft one. Oh, they got Austin Booker late, obviously, and we were all starting to get a little drunk on Austin Booker, but this is when Matthew Judon of the Patriots was out there.
Yeah, let's hear what Ryan Poles had to say about, you know, whether or not there would be regret and compensation and how he views this.
So we did a Judon conversation today. Now, he only played 4 games, hit a bicep. So just from an analytics standpoint, kind of where he's at, so just wins at it. He's 50th among defensive ends. To put in perspective, Sweat's 14th. We believe he would help us get better. Just his style. We think having a bicep rather than like a lower body injury, he still would play to the same intensity and explosion as we did before. It does come with risk, though, at 32.
He's got some things working, huh?
Yeah.
Think we'll get it over the finish line?
Poles has met New England's asking price of a third-round pick. But unless Judon agrees to a contract extension with the Bears, Chicago won't make the deal.
Just a few minutes ago, it is Matthew Judon headed to Atlanta for a 2025 third-round pick.
We try to do a really good job creating parameters that make sense for our club and that put our club in a position to be successful now, but also down the road.
I'm tormenting myself, but if you have your own guardrails that we put up to help us stay in the lane, we surely pressed up against them to acquire the player. But when it comes to losing all flexibility, like, you know, I don't think that would be smart, like, even if he has success. Now, if he has 20 sacks or something, yeah, it'll make me sick.
I don't want to get the club stuck in a position where we have a player that's here, we've given up a draft pick, and we haven't had a resolution on a contract.
But, I mean, hey, look at this.
So, I mean, it's interesting. Just by way of context, at this point, Matthew Judon has not really produced. He's got 2 sacks and 4 assists, 14 tackles total. His overall grade at PFF is 51. That's 148th out of 175 edge rushers. Just his pass rush alone, he's ranked 88th out of 175 edge rushers.
And that was Ian Cunningham, who's kind of saying to Ryan Poles, hey, man, this is what we did. We put this stuff in place so that you wouldn't have a lot of regret. Mm-hmm. Stay the course with what it is that we're doing, and we're fine. When I look at the Bears, other than pass rush, and Jarvon Dexter's been pretty good, I think the moves they made at the end of camp were decent enough moves.
Daryl Taylor is a legit speed threat off the edge, especially if the matchup is right and they're worried about Tez and Dexter and everybody else.
I look at the Bears, and the thing that I want for them probably isn't available in a trade market. What I would want is a better left tackle, but you usually aren't trading for that. Like, that's a hard thing to trade for. So
and how is it to, like, incorporate a tackle in the middle of your football season? Football trades are so weird, man.
With a new quarterback.
Yeah, with a new quarterback, and obviously new line mates and everything. It's just such an odd thing. We're so used to baseball trade conversations, which are so plug and play in terms of the players. Like, oh, we'll put him there and he knows what to do and big bang boom. Or even NBA trade conversations where it's a pickup style game and they can figure it out. I mean,
and you usually have time.
Yeah, you usually have some time, and there's so few players out there. You're just kind of, you know, learning from it. An NFL thing, man. It's like, hey, it's just such a weird thing, especially at a position like tackle.
Yeah. So for me, it's strange to say this because I don't know if I think looking at anything other than their record, I don't know if I think the Bears are necessarily like a contender yet, but I feel like they've got enough to prove that out one way or the other. I'm okay if they let it ride. Like, I'm not going to be like, they should have done something to the trade line. I think, like, let's see how this goes, and maybe the quarterback can lift you over any of your problems.
Let's hear what Brad Biggs had to tell Mully and Hoff.
We actually don't have time for that. Oh, you know why?
What?
There's an update to the schedule. Joe Cowley is going to tell us about last night.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And, you know, for a while, he was Mr. White Sox, too.
Yeah, oh, dude, Joe Cowley is great radio always. Yeah, all the White Sox stuff, he was there last night with Lonzo Ball, and where is he on his love-hate-hate-love relationship with Justin Fields and the Steelers as well?
We can ask him all those things next on The Score.
Spiegel and Holmes, afternoons on The Score.
Have to do that when that track drops, but whatever. It's the Spiegel and Holmes show. Matt Spiegel, Lawrence Holmes here with you until 6 o'clock. Dave Wannstedt will be in studio. Tony Wise will be here too. Is that right? Do we have that confirmed?
Yeah, Tony Wise is coming along with Wani, which is amazing. So we can talk offensive line with one of the gods of the offensive line coach community.
All right, I like that.
Don't mind sit alone.
We will, Tony.
Tony, we will absolutely do that. There was a really cool moment over at the United Center last night. There's a bunch of stuff going on with United Center tenants. There's stuff going on with the White Sox. There's stuff going on with the Pittsburgh Steelers.
And there's only one man who can cover all of it, Lawrence.
It's true. Our guy, Joe Cowley, who covers the Bulls for the Sun-Times, had a little extra nugget in there, too, about the White Sox when it came to his game coverage last night. We are happy to have Joe Cowley on the score with us right now. What's up, sir?
What's up, boys? Look at this duo. You've all grown up. Look at you two.
Right? I mean, like, you've known us both a long-ass time,
oh,
Joe.
Oh, my gosh. Long time. Yeah. Long time.
They put us together. You don't put guys like that in a room together. Who knows what can happen?
Who knows if there could be fun and, like, interesting conversations and whatnot. It's turned out well. And great guests, like Joe. So before we get to the White Sox stuff, because I do want to ask you some questions about that. Yeah. What was it like last night to witness what is medically one of the greatest comebacks in NBA history?
Yeah, no, I mean, it's cool. It was a cool moment. You know, I mean, obviously it would have been nice if it was a regular season game and the crowd would have been a little more raucous. But, you know, it's great for him. I mean, you know, he's not the type that opens the door on his life. You know, we don't know him like we did DeMar. We know Zach because Zach's been around so long. And I don't know if that's because he's kind of lived in the shadow of his dad, and his dad has always kind of been the loud voice in the spotlight. And maybe that's been done on purpose. But what you know of this kid, and in talking to this kid, he's pretty quiet, he's pretty reserved, but he's a good dude, and they all like him. And, you know, I mean, there's so many times where you just rolled your eyes back and said, you know, you'd get an update, you just roll your eyes back and go, "That he's done, he's done, he's done." So for him to be the only one that's really believing in this thing that he will play again when the rest of us are rolling his eyes, for him to be able to get out there and not only play but flash, I think says a lot about him and says a lot about the journey and what he's gone on, because those are some rough seas for a lot of years. So I don't know how it's going to end. I don't know if it's going to end well. But it was really cool last night. That I do know.
Yeah, you know, we're trying to kind of bask in the moment of it and give it love for a kid who said he was full of joy to even be preparing to do it. And then, like you say, to flash, making some shots, showing some help defense skills. And that one moment in the corner, Joe, where he kind of threw, you know, with some abandon, he went to make a save, because it didn't look like an NBAer going full speed. The question is if that's even possible, and if full speed or full jumping ability is good enough. Frankly, we don't know that yet.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, I didn't mean to be a realist today in my piece that I just wrote for the Sun Times and sent in, but you know, he checked out okay. It was a light practice today, so no one really went hard. His mindset is still that he wants to play tomorrow, and they have to take this kind of one game at a time. But you know, what if they can get him up to 22, 24 minutes a game? He's not going to do back to backs, and that's fine. But come February, if he's still up and running and he's flashing and he's doing what they feel like he can do and what he feels like he can do, all of a sudden he becomes a valuable trade piece with an expiring contract. And that's kind of, you know, the mindset of the reality that the Bulls have to, you know, start thinking about. You know, the hugs and the congratulations are over with now, but now it's time to get ready for basketball. And can he be a big piece in this thing for them to go ahead and move him? And, you know, I think if he's the guy I saw yesterday, and I obviously think his condition is going to get better. I think his athleticism will get slightly better looking as he trusts the knee. He's not a great athlete before the knee injury. But if he can stay healthy and continue on this path, you're telling me he doesn't help a playoff contender coming off the bench? I mean you know, I see an asset there. I see them trying to get an asset, whether it's draft pick or whatever it is. So, you know, just something to kind of monitor as far as what the long play in this is.
Joe Cali, who covers the Bulls for the Sun Times, is joining us here on Spiegel and Holmes. Do you still have your BBWA card?
I have the honorary gold card, so I could show up at a ballpark and go up to the press box and taunt Scott Merkin and guys like that if I want.
Okay, so for those who don't know, before Joe covered basketball, he covered baseball for a long time, and he was a
12 years
thorn in the side of a lot of people on both sides of town, but particularly on 35th and Shield.
Joe spit truths about Kenny Williams and White Sox brass when they didn't want them spit.
100%.
It got so, put it this way, after they sent me down to Miami after Ozzie got traded, I was at the airport flying back, and DeLuca, my sports editor, who's awesome because he was a baseball beat writer and a national baseball guy and gets it, he calls me up and he's like, "That's it, you're done." I'm like, what do you mean?" He goes, "Dude, there is nothing left for you at that. Every bridge is burnt. There is nothing left. You are done with the White Sox." I'm like, "What?" And so that was it. They sent me down to Miami knowing that there was nothing left for me to cover with this team because, I had some players still, but as far as front office, Don Cooper and, you know, ownership, it was all burnt. It was gone. So
what's your, and I think that's actually really well done by DeLuca to understand that.
That's really good. That's self-awareness.
That's good management, honestly. Yeah. So what did you think and what have you heard when the story came out in The Athletic yesterday that Jerry Reinsdorf might be interested in selling the White Sox?
Yeah, the sky is blue and could be blue in a couple years because, I mean, this has been talked about for a while that the Bulls are something he wants to keep in the family and the White Sox are a piece that's going to be turned over because the baseball will never come up with that salary cap. And so in his mind, it is a losing business. And that's been talked about by people around him, closely around him, for a couple of years now. So it's just a matter of when he's going to do it. And the way, even the way the story was worded, yeah, some group called up Jerry and said, "Yeah, we heard you guys are worth $2 billion. We'll give you $4 billion. You want to sell right now?" Heck yeah, he'd sell right now. But I don't think he's actively looking to sell the White Sox. I think he's starting to try to put pieces in place and maybe using it as leverage if he could do something with the stadium. But the people that I know that are close around him, he's still, I definitely think it's just a, once again, you know, I'm not going to do what people think I should do or when I should do it. But at the same time, I definitely think there's something, and I think we've all thought that this is not a team he wants to keep in the family. The Bulls are.
Mm-hmm. He's the only one in the family who loves them and cares about them.
It's funny because the other people in the family have tried to talk him, and this is going years back, out of some of the personnel he's held on to, knowing it was bad for the organization, and they are told, no, no, no. I mean, this is his baby, and it's always been his baby, and he's stubborn to a fault. So, I just don't think, you know, if someone came with some crazy offer, yes, but I think that's been on the table for a couple of years now.
You get a call early on the day if we ever end up doing the obituary show, because he's a complicated guy, Joe, and it's like, and it's not, and a complicated owner and a complicated legacy. It's not all negative. People go to negative town, but there's a lot of positive. Tell people some, you know?
Well, you know, when I was at the Daily South Town when I first got to Chicago, and I remember they were still in Tucson, and I was probably a couple years on the beat, and he just really liked me. He liked the way I covered the team and approached the team, and I remember one time, Scott Reifert didn't have his VP title and was still a semi-human being to talk to. And so he's like, "Hey, Jerry wants to see you up in the suite up at, you know, the old Tucson ballpark." So I go up there, and it was like when Roy Hobbs went to go see the owner and it was like dark. I remember that. I was like, "Why is this room so dark?" And he's like, "Yeah, I just want to let you know, about Frank Thomas's diminishing skills contract." And he gave me a story. And so, you know, I wrote it, and then Frank got pissed. And that's when Frank told me on the record that he's disappointed the first and 15th of every month, which is still one of the greatest quotes ever that I got. And so Jerry and I had a really good relationship. And my whole point coming from Cleveland was, if Cleveland had an owner like Jerry Reinsdorf, and we're talking about, you know, Cleveland's a city, you know, where I was born and raised, where Art Modell betrayed, the ultimate betrayal of what he did. A guy like Jerry Reinsdorf would have statues and street names all over the place. And that was always my argument with Chicago fans, is you guys don't realize what you have. You don't realize what you have. Well, the longer I was on the beat and the more I started breaking behind the scenes stuff, the relationship went really bad, and to a point where we had to meet in a press box with a little more light in it in Washington. I remember the White Sox were playing the Nationals in Interleague. I get called in there, and it's two chairs facing each other, and Reifert tries sitting down. And I said, I thought this was just he and I talking man-to-man. And Reifert's like, well, I have to be in here. And that's when I start calling him a cabana boy, but he wouldn't leave, and that's fine. And Jerry and I, it was just going at it. He starts yelling at me, I don't have to tell you a damn thing. I don't owe you anything. But then he was like, but if you have something, you should call me and run it by me. And I'm like, you just said you don't have to tell me. And so after that, the relationship was never the same. And so, there are things I really liked about him and still like about him, but it became a very difficult relationship, and that's fine. I mean, it wore its way out. And it was a very complicated relationship with he and I.
Who would you like to see start Sunday for Pittsburgh?
I would like to see what Russ can do, because I think the last two games offensively have been stagnant in the first half. And so I would like to see what Russ can do, because they're not married to either of them. And, you know, I want to see if it was Sean Payton that kind of spoiled that milk, or does Russ have something? And because, I mean, to be honest, I think Fields is playing his best football. He doesn't mean it's up to par.
He's playing very responsible football right now.
Very big boy football. And it reminds me of Roethlisberger his first couple of years, where he was game managing and let the defense do a lot of things for him. And then obviously as he developed. So it was very much like that. And to me, that there's nothing wrong with that when you have a young guy. The difference is Fields is 4 years in now, 5 years, 4 years in. So you'd like to see a bigger jump than that. But
so, Russ, no, that makes all the sense in the world. Joe, I got to jump in. How has it been for you to navigate from being a notorious Justin Fields hater and denigrator in the public space to then having to root for him and tell people that he's good? Like, how awkward has that been for you? Because it's been fun to watch.
It's not awkward at all, because I've had to pull out that tweet from January of 23 where I said, Justin Fields needs to go to the Bears and demand a trade so he can get out of there and get back to being the quarterback he was at Ohio State. That was always my argument. The culture ruined him. They ruined him from the guy I saw at Ohio State. Ruined him. First thing that Artie Smith did with him when he got him into Pittsburgh is said, what was your footwork at Ohio State? All right, let's go back to that. You feel comfortable doing that? Let's go back and do that.
All right, second question. How awkward has it been for you to watch Caleb Williams to be this obviously good and elevated above everything and know that it's better than anything you have or will have?
Well, first of all, again, you have to go back to the tweets and go back to the Dan Bernstein show when I told Bernstein this guy is unruinable. And Bernstein even said, well, the Bears could ruin him. I think Caleb is fantastic. I mean, when you guys hit a home run by getting the second best quarterback out of that draft class, you should be proud of that. The problem is, I think it's still the same ownership group. I still think it's still the same loser coach with a beard now, and you have an offensive coordinator. When a rookie wide receiver from Seattle was asked, can you talk about him?
Yeah.
He was like,
Yeah.
So,
yeah, you lost me. You lost me at go back to the Dan Bernstein show. You lost me there. I'm sorry.
Hey, Caleb Williams is a phenomenal, phenomenal talent. And I hope, I know you guys aren't used to watching high quarterback play. So, like, when you get it, it's like going from an Atari to, like, the PlayStation 5 I've been playing with for years. So it's you're excited. You're like, yeah, my PlayStation 5 is better than yours. And I'm trying to tell you, but I've had mine for years, and I know exactly how it works. But you're like, but look, I don't have Space Invaders or Pong anymore. So I know the city's excited, and they don't know what to do with themselves. But I'm just telling you, you've played 1-4 teams. Winter is coming. Winter is coming. Just trust me on that. And I'll just sit back and enjoy the show. That's all. That's what I do. I send some tweets out. I try to stay positive. I don't know if people follow me. I'm usually very positive, but sometimes I have to be realistic.
Well, I for one appreciate your candor, and you're one of the people that the guardrails of sports in this city. I think that you are that, sir. So we appreciate you sharing all of your thoughts, and unbelievable segment as for you.
It really was.
Be well, and we will see you soon.
Anytime. I love the mashup between you two, by the way. It's like two great comic books that I used to collect are now a team up. It's great.
Thank you, Joe.
See, that's why I love Joe.
Thanks,
Roll
buddy.
Tide, too.
We'll talk to you. It's Joe Kelly. That's a unique individual.
He's one of my favorite people.
There's an anniversary today that I'm excited about, and I have a T-shirt to celebrate it that I will unveil if you're watching on Twitch. It's underneath this zippy hoodie.
Oh, okay. So twitch.tv/Chicago670thescore.
Damn right.
Stick around. We'll celebrate an anniversary.
Yes,
next
we will.
On the Score.
And Wani at the top of the hour.
Mitch Rosen, the operations director at 670 The Score.
You know, we look at it as, you know, what are the hits of the day? Playing the hits.
The czar of 670 The Score. And, of course, we're talking about Mitch Rosen.
Looks like Mitch Rosen to me.
We just hired a young man from The Ohio State University. Kevin Lapka is his name.
Tell Mitch Rosen to call me the bastard.
Look at Kevin Lapka existing in the Mitch Rosen birthday mashup, even as he has left the building. That's something.
We miss Lapka. Good man.
But happy birthday, Mitch Rosen, today.
Yes, he is 70 years old today.
No way.
Today.
Yeah, he looks horrible, doesn't he?
He looks amazing. He looks great.
70. Happy birthday, Mike.
Yeah, Mike's 70.
Wow. That's tremendous.
He is not 70 years old.
He's not?
No. It is his birthday, and we love him very much, so happy birthday.
And that's why you called him 70.
Yeah, because that's what you do. You mess with your friends.
I got you. Well, that's one big thing today. The other big thing is
we were celebrating Mitch's birthday, and you just kind of want to jump to this thing that you're doing.
I really do, because happy birthday, Mitch. I already went in there and told him, and I gave him one of Shane's focaccia as a gift.
Shane, my what?
Focaccia?
Nope.
I don't think you can say that on the radio, can you?
No, I don't think so.
Focaccia?
Get the bleep out of here? What?
You don't do the I on the end. It's focaccia.
Focaccia. All right. Well, that's what I gave him.
Okay.
It was one of the breads from you. But anyway.
Good work.
Thank you. 20th anniversary today of a very important date in sports history.
Now, we haven't told the guys what this is.
No, we
haven't.
Speak
sent me this clip this morning, and I had to remind him which market he does, in fact, do radio in.
Uh-huh.
So okay. I want your reaction. So he's got a shirt. You'll see the shirt. You'll see it on Twitch. And here we go. 20th anniversary, 20 years ago today, this happened.
A pinch runner, Dave Roberts, is going to come in for Boston. Look. He can run. Picked up from the Dodgers. Miller still waiting for his first pitch. Roberts is going. Posada's throw. Roberts. Safe.
Roberts had a great jump. It was a good ball for Posada to throw on.
Miller will try to get him at least over to third base. Up the middle. Roberts will come to the plate. The throw by Williams. Bill Miller has tied it.
Mm. Happy anniversary, happy Steeliversary, I should say, to one of the most famous stolen bases in the history of baseball. Either one or two, I think. And without that Dave Roberts stolen base, the Red Sox don't score the tying run.
Jackie Robinson stealing home.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And I knew you'd be able to go there with me. Red Sox don't tie the game and eventually come back from a 3-0 deficit to beat the Yankees and erase the hammer and nail rivalry that defined the sport for decades.
All right, so here's the thing, Speaks. So we've already done like three segments on today's show that our listeners don't want to hear. Mm. I'm talking about the White Sox and the Bulls. They don't want to hear about that. And now we're doing a anniversary of Dave Roberts stealing a base for the Red Sox.
Yep.
An anniversary so important to you that you have it on a T-shirt.
I have a T-shirt that says the steal.
Okay.
That's
right.
He threw his jacket down like a stripper, too.
Didn't you wear that shirt on?
I'm also wearing pasties, fun fact.
You wore that shirt on January 6, 2021, right?
There's video of it in D.C.
Here's the thing, Speaks.
What?
I know we like to build up each other's interest, and like what we say often, if you're passionate about something, talk about it.
Stop right there. If you're passionate about something, talk about it.
Yeah,
exactly right.
The listeners don't give a flying F.
I am who
about
I am.
Dave Roberts stealing a base.
I am who I am. I know I identify as a Cubs fan. I get it. And I am in large part because of my Meatball Cubs fan wife and because of everything that has come to place. But it's okay to be who you are. I'm channeling Matt Nagy. I'm being me. and I'm Hungarian.
Shane, we should probably just give him this one.
So, you know, I tend to be the voice of reason for the show and content issues and the listener and valuing their time.
Yes.
My thing was, like, we are in baseball anniversary of the postseason season here.
Uh-huh.
Every day you see a clip on, yesterday I think was the White Sox, you know, defeating the Angels to winning the American League pennant. A couple days before that.
Why didn't you celebrate that? I would have supported that.
Because we remember lowest form of conversation. And those are Chicago things that happened, and
sure,
we do not honor those.
Hey,
so
Dave Roberts is managing in the NLCS now.
He's a baby, too.
Dave Roberts is going to be in the World Series as a manager. He's the winningest manager in baseball right now. And here's the thing. Just because we're sharing, Lawrence and I are sharing who we are as human beings with each other.
Yeah.
My dad was 8 years old in 1941 and became a Ted Williams fan. You know what I mean? Like, I'm from a family that is my ticket to sports fandom. And it culminated in 2004 with an eventual title. So it's part of the lens through which I watch and know sports.
I think that's fair. I think it's fair. And the other part, Shane, listen. We didn't give him Turn the Page.
Well, Lawrence, doesn't apply this week.
I've been denied something I wanted. We know that. Okay? The three of us know that, and we've expressed it.
He's difficult sometimes, right?
Let's give it to himself if he wants to after.
Gave it to myself.
So on the anniversary of the birth of the man that employs us, you wanted to spend more time on Dave Roberts stealing a base than Mitch's birthday.
That is a problem, and I did try to point that out, and he just went right through the stop sign. Just went right through it.
That's fair. I think Mitch would understand. I hope.
I don't. Because the way that he's not going to look at it from a personal standpoint. Look, he's going to look at it from a choice
standpoint
of program.
But I knew that you would get the other stolen base that I had in mind. And I can't. Top five stolen bases in the history of the game?
Stop.
Yeah. Congratulations.
Ricky Henderson? Ricky Henderson breaking
the greatest
of record?
All time.
Yeah.
Kenny, hit the break button.
That's it. That's the whole list.
We haven't teased Wani, so I can't do it yet.
Dave Wannstedt is going to join us, and Tony Wise is too. We'll get back to doing football. I feel like Parkins right now. Next, here on The Score.